Welcome into the Michelle and Junie Show. Happy Saturday, Nashville, and everyone out there listening this morning. I'm Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle. We've got Jared Cassidy live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios this morning. It is a cold one. We are both remote today. I'm in Cincinnati, Junie's in New York, and we've got Jared in Nashville. So we are all over the place this morning. Junie, how are you doing this morning? I think we might have lost Junie a little bit on the Zoom. Jared, how are we doing this morning?
I'm good. I'm looking at frozen Junie. It's kind of comical, but once he gets up and running, I'm sure we'll be good to go.
It's the struggle of remote working and working virtually. Junie, we got you back. Junie, how are we doing this morning? I think you're muted still, June.
I'm turning into Joe Rexford. Jesus. Okay. No, I'm here in New York City, Brooklyn, at my father and mother-in-law's house. Traveled to bring our little baby boy to come and see his other side of the family. So other than getting delayed a couple times because of New York struggles in the airports, it's all been good. So good night's sleep and happy to be on the show this morning.
We love that. Happy weekend to everybody. Listen, our show is presented by Superbook Sports. Later in the show at 10:45, we will be making some picks. We're going to be taking a look at the college basketball slate. We're going to be making some picks for those games. We got a big one for the Vols today, coming off their win over number one Alabama on Wednesday. They're heading up to Lexington, and they will face my Kentucky Wildcats. It's going to be a good one. That one will tip off right as we conclude our show today. But if you listen to us every morning, you know how we like to start. We're going to start with the morning brew. Jared, hit it.
On the sports world for the biggest headlines. This is the morning brew. Presented by Nashville Jam Company on Michelle and Junie.
Time for our biggest headlines with the morning brew. First one I already mentioned, UT coming off a huge win over number one ranked Alabama on Wednesday night in Knoxville. That was a great bounce back game for UT, especially after the two really tough losses to Vanderbilt and Missouri with last second 3-point shots. Junie, what does this say for the Vols, you know, beating the number one team as the SEC tournament is just weeks away and it'll be right in our backyard in Nashville? What do you think this does for the Vols' confidence, you know, not only finishing out their regular season schedule, but then also heading into the tournament time?
I would say it boosts their confidence tremendously, and it shows that mentally that this team is tough. Also, I mean, not to mention that they're a tough defensive team on the court as well. I mean, you go back-to-back games, the buzzer beater against Vanderbilt, the crazy buzzer beater with Missouri coming and getting a win in Knoxville. It really shows that mentally that this Vols team can kind of turn it around and get a big victory. But I'll tell you what, Michelle, they got another one today going up against Kentucky at Rupp Arena, which both you and I know especially is a very tough place to play, and Kentucky is a desperate team. And the SEC is just a gauntlet of college basketball programs this season. I mean, I think hands down, them and the Big 12 are definitely the superior conferences this season. So it's gonna be tough for UT to, you know, keep battling through to try and get that one seed. But beating a team like Alabama, playing a, I would say, kind of a classic game, like a very defensive, physical matchup, which is the basketball that I grew up loving and knowing. It was a great game to watch. It was very entertaining. And when you can force the number one team in the nation to commit, what was it, about 19 turnovers? Did Alabama have 19? Well, it was something like that.
It was around
something like that.
The Vols were able to capitalize off the turnovers, also holding Alabama to 59 points. That team's traditionally scoring about 80 points a game. The best, I would say, defensive performance from the Vols all season long. Something to also mention, two of their starters, Josiah Jordan-James and Julian Phillips, did not play. Still a question mark as if they will play today. I doubt they will play. On the other side with Kentucky, they've got C.J. Fredericks and Xavier Wheeler also injured, and I don't think they'll play today too. So the Vols and Kentucky have two of their best players both out today. So kind of, you know, even in the playing field for both of them as they head into that game. Like I said, that game will tip off as soon as we finish today. Jared, as a Vols fan, to see them, you know, with those, first off, the Vanderbilt loss, the Missouri loss, two losses that they should have won. That team should have won those games. How great was it to see them beat Alabama in Knoxville on Wednesday night?
It's been kind of a chaotic week and a half, but I mean, they lost on those last two threes. On those are just, that's college basketball. That's what it's all mm-hmm. about. So, I mean, yeah, they should have won those, but the game's not played on paper. But yeah, to see them beat Bama, I texted a buddy of mine and I was like, man, this is just stereotypical Tennessee Vols basketball. Can beat some really good teams, but also can lose to Oregon State in the second round. Or, I mean, it's like I still think they can make a run. I just don't think that it's as deep as people think. I don't want people to get a big head about that.
The team definitely has the talent to be a Final Four team, but
that defense is very bad, though.
Say that again.
The defense has been very bad the last month, I would say.
Yeah, I think that they definitely, you know, kind of reset their defensive performance on Wednesday. They got to keep that rolling as they finish out conference play. Still fighting for that one seed. I think Tennessee still has a chance to get that one seed. On the other side of things, Vanderbilt men's basketball has also, you know, had quite the run after beating Tennessee. They went on to then win against Florida. They went on to beat South Carolina in South Carolina. And today they have a huge matchup in Memorial in Nashville. They face Auburn coming into town. Vanderbilt is making themselves a pretty good resume as we start to end the year. It's kind of borderline on whether they'll be able to make it in the NCAA tournament because they did have some early losses, some early non-conference losses that will hurt them, but they could end up finishing about third in the SEC right now. They've got Auburn coming in tonight. So that'll be a home game tonight in Memorial. Going to be a huge matchup. If they can get this win, then they will find themselves in a nice spot as we head into the SEC tournament just a couple of weeks away.
I'm looking at Vanderbilt's schedule going down the rest of the season prior to the SEC tournament, Michelle. And you're right. This team has been on a roll. It seems like Jerry Stackhouse and these guys have kind of found their groove. And I think that this Auburn game is going to be a pivotal game for this Vanderbilt Commodore team, because you look at who they got next. They're playing at LSU. LSU is probably one of the worst teams in the SEC. They're playing Florida again at home, a team they just beat on the road in a really tough environment. They're going to Kentucky, which, you know, that'll be a really hard game to play because, you know, Kentucky's also a desperate team as well. And then they cap the season at home against Mississippi State. So I would say, you know, if they get this win at Auburn and then the rest of the way, their only loss is at Kentucky, and they make a little bit of noise in the SEC tournament, maybe get a win they're not supposed to. I mean, you're talking about a team that could be one of the Final Four teams to be selected into the tournament. So Vanderbilt, you know, really turning the ship around, especially after that really bad Alabama loss a couple weeks ago. It's kind of one of the better stories, you know, around Nashville of what this team could do, because people were calling for Jerry Stackhouse's job just only a couple weeks ago. So, you know, good for him and good for this program to really get a big turnaround and really start to turn the ship.
Junie, I agree. And I think that Vanderbilt is definitely a team that could find themselves, you know, playing on a Friday of this SEC tournament. They're not going to be playing on a Wednesday. I think that they could be playing on Friday, and I do think that they could win some games in the tournament. In these next five games, I think that something realistic would be 3 out of 5 games. You know, if they can get 4 or 5 out of 5 next games, I mean, that would be very, very impressive to close out the year. Liam Robbins has been the anchor of this team, literally and figuratively. The guy had 32-10 in Florida. And then at South Carolina, I think he had 23 and 8 rebounds, something along those lines. So his numbers are going to be huge. And his connection with their point guard, Ezra, has just been really, really working for this team and has been the secret sauce for this Vanderbilt basketball team. Going to be interesting to see that matchup tonight in Memorial. On the other side of things, another team in town, the Nashville Predators lose 5-0, get shut out in Smashville this week as the Boston Bruins come to town. Last Saturday when we had our show, Junie, when we had Nick Kuether on, the Predators' chances to make the playoffs were 23%. Now sitting at an 8.2% this morning, drastically changed in just 1 week. They lose to the Arizona Coyotes. Then they also have a huge loss, shutout loss in Bridgestone. What are your thoughts quickly on this game? And then we are going to have some major questions to Predators fans out there. We got a lot of feedback on Friday on Chase and Michelle. I have about 50 Twitter replies on how season ticket holders are feeling. What is the vibe of this fan base? But what did you see, Junie, this week in the Bruins game?
It was embarrassing. I mean, I will note that, you know, Philip Forsberg has been out with that upper body injury for the last week or so. So, you know, missing your number one goal scorer is always going to be rough. But, you know, the fact that you get a test like this and the part of the season that not only your GM and your coach has put it out to you as the players, that this is the time to turn it up. This is the time to get going if you're going to make something of this season. And what better test to do that than this Boston Bruins team, which is on the verge of potentially being the best regular season professional hockey team in history. So There's no better test than that. And they came into your home arena and they absolutely dominated you. And on top of that, every time they scored, you could hear their fans cheering. And I think when you look back at what Bridgestone Arena was 5 years ago when this team was competitive and winning playoff series, no one would have ever guessed that another team would come into this arena and make more noise and out cheer and out yell our own home fans. So very embarrassing, very eye opening. And I think that this is one of those games that can really this could really dictate the direction of the franchise going forward.
A lot of questions for the Nashville Predators, especially as the trade deadline is just weeks away. We want to hear from you fans, from Predators fans. Text us or call us 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Our phone and text line is driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Coming up next, I'll ask Junie a question about the Nashville Predators and how could that game we saw this week impact the way the Predators are going to look in the future. You're listening to the Michelle and Junie Show on 102.5, 106.3, The Game in the Game Nashville app. Welcome back into the Michelle and Junie Show. I'm Michelle Knezovic. Junie Ritta will be with you up until 11 a.m. this morning discussing the Nashville Predators right now, and what will their season look like, or what will this stretch of time look like leading up until the trade deadline coming up at the first week of March? Michelle Knezovic, Junie Ritta. Junie, we had a lot of interaction with the fans on Twitter. I posed a question yesterday and I said, Preds fans, if the organization went into a full rebuild mode, would you still go to the games, buy season tickets, support the team, asking questions to the fans? An overwhelming amount of people said yes. Yes, we still would attend the games. We still would have season tickets because they feel like they will know what the plan is for this team. They feel like that this team will have a direction and that they are in the conversation. And we had people calling and I talked to fans and I said, you know, do you care if you're losing? And they said, no, because at least we'll know where we're going and we're not sitting in this barely making the playoffs, losing in the first round, this mediocrity that they've been in for the last couple of years, ever since they came off that cup run in 2017, trying to make this core fit when it's worked here and there, but it hasn't been able to be what it was in 2017 and they haven't been able to get back to where they want to be. Junie, when you hear that from fans, what goes through your head or what's your first thought, you know, when I say that?
Well, my first thought, Michelle, is that you hit the nail on the head. When you say that at least the fans know what direction this organization is going in, it gives them something to look forward to in the future. I don't know about you, Michelle. I mean, I love pro sports because there's so much to it. You know, in college sports, there's recruiting. You get your guys in. You've implemented the transfer portal. But when it comes to professional sports, it's like there's contracts, there's free agencies, there's trades. And when you see the direction of the organization turn from, hey, we were really competitive, but now the last couple of years, we haven't been as successful, and we're stuck in the same spot that I've kind of mentioned with the Tennessee Titans at times, that mediocre, you're not good enough to compete, and you're not bad enough to rebuild. And that's where the Predators have been, you know, really since they won the President's Trophy back in 2019. So at least the fans have something to look forward to. And for me personally, it's so cool to kind of see your team rebuild because you're so familiar with the core. And I feel like the newness, the unknown is attractive and entertaining because you're like engaged into your team and engaged with what's going on because you want to get involved. You want to say, hey, I think they should go out and get this guy. I think they should draft this guy. I think this guy would really, you know, fit with the culture of our team and the identity that we want to build. Rebuilding could be fun for a fan base if you actually really get into it. And I think Preds fans are into this team enough that they are willing to go through the pains of a rebuild because it's exciting. It's something new. It's a new turn in the organization. And when you've been getting the same results over and over again, something like this can be refreshing and actually bring more fans in because it's the commodity is going to be unknown rather than what it is right now in the last 3 to 4 seasons. I mean, it's been the same song and dance. I mean, you've barely made the playoffs and you've been eliminated in the first round.
And I think, you know, the question comes about the rebuild is how did we get here or what happened or who do we blame, right? Is it David Poile? Is it John Hines? Is it the players? And Ryan McDonough spoke after the game, after the Bruins game. And I thought he had some really, really interesting comments. And it kind of gave me a little light bulb went off in my head as to what is going on with this team. Here was Ryan McDonough after the 5-0 loss to the Bruins this week.
I think there's a lot of execution left out there by us, lack of it. You know, we see a lot of missed passes, you know, some odd man rushes where you'd like to generate something and we don't. You know, there's a willingness and a price to pay, you know, if you want to win in this league. And certainly that team was doing it consistently throughout the game. Just being disciplined, putting pucks behind us, wearing us down that way, taking what's given if there was an opportunity on odd man. And certainly, you know, didn't give us anything for free. And so I think that's the difference in the game. You know, they win the special teams and obviously 5-on-5. So it's tough to find a way to win games when you're kind of lacking in all those areas.
Ryan McDonough, a guy who has been in the NHL for 13 seasons, 2014 went to the Stanley Cup Finals with the Rangers, won a cup in Tampa with the Tampa Bay Lightning. And now was here with the Nashville Predators. Ryan McDonough, a guy who has, you know, experienced a lot in this league, including a winning culture, experienced what it is like to be a part of a team who puts in absolutely everything. And it pays off because he's won a Stanley Cup. Ryan McDonough, his first year with the Nashville Predators, season nearing the end, 3/4 of the way through the season in the final couple weeks now as you try to fight for a playoff spot, knows what it's like to fight with a team to secure a playoff spot to try to go win the Stanley Cup. Ryan McDonough, a guy who will stand up after this game and say, you know what? We didn't execute. This is on us. We left things out there on the ice. And what that says to me is, you know, people aren't putting everything in, Junie.
I think it's a little bit of everything. And I think there's, you know, when you look at the, you know, the kind of the blame pie here, per se, you know, there are things that, you know, David Poile, the GM, has done that have been, you know, somewhat questionable. I would say, you know, the coach, John Hines, putting his players in position to succeed. I mean, we've seen that with Ellie Tolvanen in Seattle. You know, they put him in a position to succeed. It's not as if that the Predators don't have talent. I just don't feel as if that they're really kind of, number one, harnessing and putting all their pieces in the correct places. And on top of that, this is a team that just simply doesn't have confidence, Michelle. I mean, you look at their schedule. I mean, they go through runs where they look really good and they're really competitive with playoff caliber teams. And then they go on other runs where they're losing multiple straight and they're losing to teams that are bottom feeders like the Arizona Coyotes did this past weekend or this past week at Bridgestone Arena. So there's a lot of stuff to get into when it comes to who's to blame. But I would say really the number one thing is the players and what kind of position they're putting themselves into. I mean, last season, Roman Josi, nearly 100 points, you know, was up for defensive player of the year. And he's sitting at 44 points right now, you know, almost, you know, three-fourths the way through the season, like you mentioned. Philip Forsberg, only 42 points and 19 goals after, you know, being the first Predator to ever score 40 goals in a season. Matt Duchene, 16 goals on the year. He also had 40 goals last year. And also, coming into this season, what was the number one thing that everyone was talking about? It was the second line. And the second line this year has been the worst aspect of this team. Mikael Granlund, Ryan Johansson, and Nino Niederreiter. They have the worst plus-minus on this entire team. Whenever these guys are on the floor, the Predators are getting outscored exponentially. So there's just a lot that goes into this. I feel like they're failing on all three levels, you know, management, coaching, and players, and there has to be a tide turn. You know, like you had mentioned, the trade deadline is coming up. They have to make a big move. They have to. If you're thinking that moving off Dante Fabbro is going to be the move that's really going to kind of get this rebuild started and kind of, you know, be the new turning tide of this Predators team, you're fooling yourself. It's got to be something bigger than that. And I feel like right now they're scared of losing big assets because they're afraid of what this fan base and what this team is going to look like when they're not in the playoff picture. But as of right now, you know, like you said, 8.2% chance to make the playoffs at this moment in time. It's time. It's time to make a big move. It's time to move off one of these old veterans that are making a lot of money. And it's really starting to try to, you know, manage and go young and elevate some of this young talent that you have on this team and try to move forward, because what you're doing right now is just getting worse and worse and worse every single season.
So the Predators, I think, you know, people know that they definitely will not be buyers at the deadline. I think that's a pretty clear message. So are they sellers? Or are they in a position where they don't really have assets, or the assets that they want to give up, will other teams take them around the league? Peter LeBrun came out with an article on The Athletic and had some interesting comments in regards to the Nashville Predators, David Poile, and what they could do at the trade deadline. Junie and I will discuss all on the other side of the break. You're listening to The Michelle and Junie Show on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Welcome back in, Michelle and Junie. I'm Michelle Knezvik, Junie Riddle. We got Jared Cassidy live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios in Nashville this morning. Talking the Nashville Predators, we want to hear how you feel as fans about the Nashville Predators right now. Text us, call us. We're taking your texts, your calls for the rest of the show. 615-737-1025. 615-737-1025, driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. Junie, I said something before we went to the break. Peter LeBrun, NHL insider and writes for The Athletic, had some interesting comments on David Poile, the Nashville Predators, and just in regards to the trade deadline as a whole. I'm going to read them here. So this came out on Friday. This was Peter LeBrun. If this weekend goes poorly for the Predators, my understanding is that veteran GM David Poile will be ready to open the phone lines and listen on almost anyone. We really haven't heard about the Predators players on the trade front these past weeks. That's because Poile keeps things very close to the vest and he wants to give his team a chance. But if things don't get going right now, I believe Nash will be ready to listen with an open mind on Matthias Ekholm, Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson, Mikael Granlin, Nino Niederreiter. If the Preds fall out of it over the next week, which they're at 8% right now, I truly believe this team will be ready to listen on all of those players. The fly in the ointment is that the Predators don't have any pending unrestricted free agents of note, the type of players who normally get dealt at this time of the year. The players I mentioned are all signed past this year. Most of the players on the Nashville roster are. So if the Predators become sellers, they'll be trying to make hockey deals, not rental deals, which in some ways are harder to make in season. And on the other hand, it opens up teams looking for players signed this year. That is what I mentioned. The Nashville Predators are going to want to be sellers, but some of the guys and some of the contracts that they want to get off of, Junie, are really hard to get off of. I think of, you know, Ryan Johansson, who is paid through 2025. He's making almost $8 million a year. You know, Philip Forsberg, Roman Josi, they're all signed through, I think, 2028, 2029. Those guys you're not going to get rid of. But guys like Mikael Granlin, Matt Duchene, Ryan Johansson, those contracts are going to be really hard to get off of because, you know, at this time of the year, if a team is trying to add a piece here or there to make a cup run because they think that they have all the pieces, it's a hard cap in the NHL. So, okay, yeah, if you don't have to pay them this year, you have to pay, you know, what is ever left of their contract for this final year, you can push the full amount off till next year. You're probably going to be over the cap. And yeah, it's going up a million. It'll go up another million next year. That's not a lot of money in the grand scheme of things. So
no.
The guys that they want to get rid of, we talk about the Nashville Predators being sellers, but my question and my worry is that, you know, the guys they actually want to get rid of, people around the league aren't going to want them because they have these huge contracts.
Yeah, and that's part of this situation is, you know, some of these guys, you know, especially a guy like Ryan Johansson, who played really, really well, you know, in the 2016, 2017, 2018 years, and got signed to a big contract. But the last 3 or 4 years, the continuous conversation has been, well, he's not really living up to that. And he's, again, you had mentioned he's making $8 million a year. You know, they got rid of Fiala and got Mikael Granlin. And now Fiala is off being a star player elsewhere. Whereas now, you know, Mikael Granlin has continuously underperformed. And, you know, when you look at the contract, he's only making $5 million a year, which, like you said, you know, when the cap's only going up a million and the cap in the NHL is super, super tight, it's not flexible like the NFL, it's really hard to move off guys like this. And I know that I had heard that Matthias Ekholm will be on the trading block. I think that is one guy that a team that's really looking up to beef up their blue line could go out and use because he's hands down, you know, a top two or a second pairing defenseman, which can go links for a team that's trying to make a run. Anytime that you can beef up your blue line and get a little bit better defensively, that's going to be the guy that I'm looking at. But, you know, there have been some, you know, chatter about this. And again, this might be a little bit early, but UC Soros is an excellent goaltender. I would say he's borderline top five. I don't necessarily know if he is top five just because of what's around him. But I think if you put him on a contending team, I think hands down, he would be a top five goalie in the league. And my question is, when you have a guy like Askarov, you know, playing in Milwaukee right now, and he's coming up the pipeline, and yeah, he's still young, but would it be out of the question to think that this team could trade UC Soros to get a load to come in here, maybe get a forward, maybe get a really high prospect and a bunch of draft picks in order to try and really revamp this rebuild? Or do they move off multiple? Do they move off Soros? Do they move off Ekholm? Do they move off both of them? Do they really try and turn this ship around to get as much quality in return as they possibly can? I mean, I would say at this moment in time, especially when the one team that you need to catch up to is the Minnesota Wild, and you play them next week, if they lose that game, I mean, your chances of making the playoffs are almost gone. I mean,
and right now, I mean, we look at the chances. Technically, yeah, they still have a chance. They're a couple points behind, like you said, the Minnesota Wild, 8% right now. It would be a very tall task. And Adam Vingan actually did the math. In the next 30 games, they need to win 18 to 20 of the 30 games, which is a very, very tall task, especially, you know, towards this point in the season to make the playoffs. And if you still are trying, I mean, first off, that's a tall task at hand for this team. But then also, if you're wanting to sell guys, you know, at this point, if you're moving off guys and trying to sell them before the deadline, you're probably not going to win those 20-ish of the 30 games left in the season. You mentioned UC Saros and moving off UC Saros. I brought this up on Chase and Michelle. I look at the goalie move, though. I don't think that would be something that would be in season. You know, when you talk about off season and something that could happen over the summer, I do agree with that. And Chase and I were talking. Chase said, you know, I don't want to call it a full rebuild and strip it all the way down. And I was like, no, because you do have some, you know, promising younger guys who have been performing, such as, you know, UC Parsonen, Cody Glass, Tommy Novak, guys like that, Philip Tomasino, you know, coming down from Milwaukee. He's a guy who you want to be a top six forward in the NHL. So when it comes to, you know, blowing it up, could you trade a UC Saros, have a bridge guy next year? You get
like Kevin Lankinen. Keep Kevin Lankinen.
That was my thought, right? Keep Kevin Lankinen, you know, this next year, be part of the rebuild, you know, really focus on getting a lot for UC Saros, because you will. And Junie, I believe he is a top five goalie in the NHL. I mean, he was up for the Vezina last year. He's going to be up for it again this year. The year before last, he should have been up for the Vezina. He should have won the Vezina that year. I think, you know, a part of the reason we may be looking at him like, is he a top five goalie this year, is because the defense has been so bad and they put him in so many situations where he should not be in. I mean, he can only make, you know, I mean, what was the Hurricanes game? I mean, he had 64 saves, something outrageous, which, yeah, it's incredible he had 64 saves, but also his defense shouldn't be putting him in a situation like that. He can't be the entire team. And I think also a point to mention is the reason this team is even has a chance to sniff the playoffs right now is because of UC Saros. They didn't have UC Saros.
Agree.
This team would be mediocre. I mean, look at last year where they had Matt Duchene, Philip Forsberg, and Roman Josi. Roman Josi made history as a defenseman. I mean, Matt Duchene and Philip Forsberg were at the peak performance. And, you know, to expect them and think about it. And then they still got swept in the playoffs. And then to expect them the year before, even with some additions you added, you know, to be even able to sniff that level of performance is hard, because if you look at those guys, that is the only year we've seen. I'm leaving Roman Josi out of it, because Roman Josi, you know, of course, is one of your best players. But, you know, when it comes to Matt Duchene and Philip Forsberg, those seasons stuck out. Last year stuck out compared to, you know, if you look at an entire resume of theirs, their entire NHL resume, those seasons stuck out as, you know, very, very elite. But we haven't been able to see, you know, even sniffing that level on a consistent basis from those guys. And we've seen the drop off this year. So, you know, when I think about a full rebuild, I truly believe that that is the way they should go. But another question, not just looking at the players, but the coaches. And John Hines and Elliot Friedman was on with Caroline Willie and D-Mace, and he spoke about John Hines and what his security level is with the Nashville Predators.
Look at the next 4 days for the Predators. You got the Bruins tonight, the Panthers on Saturday, and then, of course, the Wild on Sunday. Really key and important 4 days for the Predators. If those 4 days go badly, is John Hines on the hot seat?
You know, the only thing I would say, like, I think when you're in a situation like this, Carolyn, nobody feels comfortable. Nobody does. Look, the toughest thing to do in sports is go backwards. Last year, you guys had a really good year. You got into the playoffs. Unfortunately, Saros got hurt, and that led to a pretty lopsided series. But you guys earned your playoff berth last year. Earned it. The toughest thing in sports is to go backwards, because now everybody's asked the same questions and feels the same way that you're asking me right now. It feels like a failure. It feels like a step back. So I think everybody in Nashville right now probably feels uncomfortable. For me, the question is, like, do they just wait out the season and talk about changes then, or do they do anything in season? I'm not sure it makes any sense to do anything in season.
I was just muted there a second. That was Elliot Friedman on with Caroline Willie and D-Mace earlier this week discussing the Predators shouldn't feel comfortable. And one of the biggest questions will be, do they make moves in the season? Do they wait till the summer? Do they make a huge blockbuster trade like releasing a UC Saros? We have some texts on the text line. Elliot really quick said, I'm 100% in on blowing it up. I have no strong feelings for any players except maybe Saros. See, he's created, you know, the fan base has begun to love him, but unfortunately he is one of your best players who know you don't want to get rid of, but you know, with a scar off in Milwaukee, you have a younger guy, you know, coming up who, you know, talked about one of the top goalie prospects in the world. So unfortunately, you know, UC Saros would be a piece that you would be able to get a lot for. And Elliot also said the mediocrity ain't it. He also said, Michelle is so amped about UK today. Homegirl can't even pronounce the names when I messed up Philip Tomasino's names. I'm just so excited today. I'm coffeed up, Junie.
If you're a UK fan and Tennessee's coming into Rupp Arena, you'd be excited too. Don't get on Michelle about messing up Philip Tomasino's name. Come on, take it easy.
I'm like, what is he saying there? He said basketball. And I like reread and I was like, oh, I know what he was saying. And Ramon from Franklin just said, Michelle, you went full Joe on there. That was a hard mute, LOL. Yeah, that was a bad one. I will say that was a bad one. We're going to leave that one in this segment and we're going to move on to the next segment, Junie. I have a question for you. And we also have a text on the text line, April in Portland. She texts in all the time, a huge Nashville Predators fan. She brings up a couple interesting points on the text line. You're listening to Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.
Why would you hold on to Ekholm 1 and trade Fabbro 2?
Well, the thing about Ekholm to me is, like, first of all, Carolyn, it all depends on what offer you get. Like, if you get blown away on an offer by a certain player, sometimes you just have to say, well, I wasn't expecting that. I got it, and I'm making the move. So it's all, like, if you get blown away for Ekholm, then I think you have to do it. But all things being equal, here's what I think about Ekholm. I think he's a huge part of your team. I think that he's still a very, very useful player. I think that if you trade him, you're going to be looking, there'll be times next year, as soon as next year, where you'll be saying, boy, I wish we had Ekholm here. And, you know, I just think like that you're putting a hole in your lineup that is going to be hard to fix. Those kinds of players are hard to find. So unless for some reason Ekholm wants to leave or you really feel he's the guy you have to move, I think you're creating a problem that you're eventually going to have to fix. Unless you guys think there's somebody there that can take his job and his role over right away, I wouldn't be looking to do that.
That was Elliot Friedman earlier this week with Caroline Willie and D-Mace discussing Matthias Ekholm. Wow, I am just really struggling today, guys. And on whether the Nashville Predators should consider trading Matthias Ekholm. I agree with Elliot Friedman. He's a guy who is a core part of your team, part of your franchise. You just signed him to a contract extension last year. Right now, Matthias Ekholm has a four-year contract, $25 million, guaranteed annual salary of $6.2 million. But he is a guy who would be valuable to another team. Matthias Ekholm is part of the heart and soul of the Nashville Predators. And I think Elliot Friedman brought up a really good point that you're going to get to a point next year. If you want to retool this team, Matthias Ekholm is a guy you want to be a part of this retool, Junie.
I get the fact that it's harder to find defensemen than it is to, you know, get centers and forwards. And Ekholm has been a staple of this franchise for a long time now. And like you said, they did just re-sign him a few years ago. But when you look at all the other assets that the Predators could possibly move off of, if it's not UC Saros, then Ekholm is the next big-time player in line that can actually you can actually get some decent compensation for. And it's like, I get what Elliot Friedman is saying to a point, but if this team is going to go into a new direction, wouldn't it be like, what, like, I get it. You're going to feel the void of losing a player like that. But if you're trying to rebuild, then why, like, what is the big deal of missing out on a player like that when you can get genuine assets for the future? That's my point is like, yeah, you can hold on to Ekholm, but is Ekholm being on the team right now putting you into contention? No, he's not. And I personally think that he is probably easily right now the most tradable player on this roster right now, with all the contract situations.
Value.
Yeah, especially when you look at Granlund, Johansson, and Duchesne, like those guys are going to be hard to move off of. Ekholm would probably be the easiest player to go, you know, find a new home for and get decent assets for.
Junie, I agree. Junie, you mentioned you had a point to make about this season compared to last season for the Nashville Predators.
So I found it really interesting because, you know, after the, I believe it was the 2021 playoffs, they move off guys like Ryan Ellison and Victor Arvidsson. And those were, you know, big production guys. And so the following season, the expectations, which was last season, the expectations of the Predators were to miss the playoffs, that they weren't supposed to be a good team, right? Mm-hmm. You know, people thought that they were, you know, kind of selling off some of their players like we want them to do now, and that they weren't going to be in contention. But what happened? Roman Josi has a career year. Duchesne has a career. Forsberg has a career. So the narrative went from they're going to start rebuilding slowly. They're not going to be in contention anymore to, oh, this past offseason, they're a couple assets away, and then they're going to be right back into it. Mm-hmm. And we didn't think for one minute that, you know, maybe Forsberg and Duchesne aren't going to put up 40 goals again. You know, maybe the career year that Roman Josi had as he's getting a little bit older, not saying that he's not a good player anymore, because, you know, Roman Josi still hands down one of the best defensemen in the NHL, but maybe he's not going to have as productive of a year like that again at his age. And when you go out and you're buyers and you go out and get a Nino Niederreiter and you go out and get a Ryan McDonagh, it set a false expectation that this team was going to come in, because a lot of people were saying the Preds are going to be the third, fourth best team at worst in the Central Division. And right now, when you look at teams like the Dallas Stars, they pass you up. They're the number one team in the West. The Winnipeg Jets. The Seattle Kraken, you know, they were an expansion franchise last year. Now they're one of the best teams, you know. So there's a lot of, I feel like, false expectations for this team because of all the breakout years that they had last year, and they slid into the playoffs barely with those career years. And now that those guys aren't playing to that level, that exponential level that they were, that the production that they were getting last year, even with the new additions, this team is worse than it was last year because they're not getting that same production. I just thought that was a bad thing to look towards.
No, and Junie, I agree. You know, I definitely mentioned and thought of, okay, well, there's definitely going to be some drop off from guys like Matt Duchesne, Forsberg, and Josi just because of the level they were performing at. But, you know, I mean, we talked about it earlier in the show. Philip Forsberg, 40 goal season, is at 19 right now. I mean, I think when you look at a drop off, you think, okay, maybe a little drop off, but half the production that you were able to have last year, I think that drop off is too big. And I think when, you know, we noticed that this team, nobody had expectations to make the playoffs, they find themselves in the playoffs, you think, okay, if they can even have 3/4 the amount of production they had last year, but half, I think, is just too much of a drop off, especially with the amount of money that these guys are getting paid. A text on the text line, April from Portland. I want to get to it. She's a season ticket holder. She's an avid Nashville Predators fan. She is usually looks at this team with the glass half full, but even her thought on this team has changed a bit negative. We'll get to that all on the other side. Hour number two coming up of Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Hour number two of Michelle and Junie. Welcome back in, Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle. We got Jared Cassidy, who's live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios this morning. Listen, we are streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube. Our stream is presented by Superbook. Talking to Nashville Predators, what will they do when it comes to the trade deadline? How does the fan base feel? If this team goes into a full rebuild, how would you feel as a fan? Would you want to buy season tickets still? How do the season ticket holders feel? I've been mentioning this text on the text line. And listen, if you have any thoughts, we're opening to calls. We're opening to text 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. April in Portland. She is a fan. She always usually looks at things with the glass half full. She sent in a long text this morning, and I'm going to read the whole text, and I want to get your thoughts on this, Junie. Okay, so this is April in Portland. I'm a huge fan, and I always will be. Win or lose, Hines and Poyle, whoever. True fans are fans no matter what. I'm extremely frustrated as a fan right now. I'm a season ticket holder, have been for 5 years. Going to Bridgestone, watching Preds is my favorite thing to do, but not so much in this current state. I have never, in all caps, left a game early until the Knights game a few weeks ago and then again against the Coyotes. This has not been a fun season. The atmosphere is not there. The majority of fans sell their tickets to other fans. It's embarrassing. The most frustrating part for me is seeing tickets on Ticketmaster sell for less than what I paid for as a season ticket holder. We go to almost every game. We missed one home game last season and a few this season. I can't sell tickets for the cost. I can't even give them away for free. My husband and I are teachers, work at two different schools. When you can't give tickets away, when you offer them to 200 people, that says a lot. I'm in the minority with wanting the Preds to make the playoffs. Edmonton has two of the best forwards in the league, one being the best player in the world, and they can't make it to the cup. They were awful years and had the first pick in the draft 2 years in a row. I would rather make the playoffs every year than go down that road. There is never a guarantee that taking and selling will be positive. Edmonton has proved that. I think Hines is the main issue. His system does not lend itself to the talents of his players, with the exception of the big guys like the Herd. I think a new coach is the answer. If that doesn't work, Lord help us all. Also, a new GM would be fantastic. Love 102.5. Listen every day. April, we love you too. Thank you so much for giving us your input. A lot of different thoughts there. You know, as a fan, I think one of the biggest things, and she mentioned, you know, season ticket holders and people not, and she's not the only one, because we had callers yesterday, not being able to sell their tickets. I mean, we live in a city like Nashville where, I mean, who doesn't want to go to an NHL game? And I can sense the frustration of, you know, I'm a season ticket holder and now people can get tickets for very, very cheap the day of a game, or I can't even give these tickets away for free. Because, and I think a part of that too is the fans want to know what the plan is from David Poyle. They want to know what is happening. They want to feel included in where is this franchise going? Because, you know, when you talk about sports ownership, them putting an investment in, whether it's a GM they're deciding to hire, whether it's an investment in a new stadium, a new, you know, a new player they want to go out and get, a new coach, fans are putting that investment in too. When you are signing up to buy season tickets, when you are signing up for a couple of years to buy season tickets, you're putting a financial investment on your end too, because you're buying into the product. And if the product isn't what you want to see, why are you going to financially invest your money into a product where, you know, you're buying these season tickets and then you go to the concession stands and, you know, all the food in Bridgestone Arena and the drinks, that's really expensive. And you're buying the gear and you're buying the apparel. So, you know, I completely understand when fans say, yeah, like, we're really frustrated in how this season has turned out, Junie. And we talked about it last segment, right? Guys performing at such a high level and the drop-off being so dramatic this season that people probably signed up for season tickets last year thinking, okay, because the message from the GM, from the coach was, we're going for it. We barely made the playoffs last year, but look at how our core performed. We're adding to that because we want to, you know, push towards another run. We want a 2017 again. And yeah, I know making it to the Stanley Cup finals, that is really, really hard to do. But you also don't want to be the team that's just barely making into the playoffs like the Predators did last year. And the likelihood of them doing this year is very, very slim. Still a chance, but slim.
So, I think April laid it out perfectly. And thank you again, April, for being a continuous listener and sending in your feedback. Because that's what we want. We want to hear, you know, it's not the State of the Union, it's the state of Smashville right now. And to one of her points that I would disagree with, because I agreed with almost 90% of what she said, to the one point that I disagreed with was, you know, when she compared the Preds to the Oilers and how they had the number one pick back-to-back years, and now they have two of the best forwards in the game. When you look at a guy like Connor McDavid, if the Predators were to go and get a guy like in Draisaitl, and if the Preds were to go and be you know, in contention for the number one pick for a few years, maybe a year or two, and let's say that they moved off UC Soros and got a haul, and let's say that they found a suitor for Matt Duchene, you know, based off the production, I believe he had 43 goals last year. Maybe they are able to move off of him and, you know, somehow get out of the Ryan Johansson and Mikael Granlund contracts that have just been a disaster for this team. You free up a bunch of cap space. You get a haul for the players that you can. And then if you were to get rid of UC Soros and be towards the bottom of the standings in contention for that first pick, the difference between the Predators and the Oilers is the Preds have one of the best young goalie prospects in the entire NHL. Askarov is going to be a star. He really is. He looked really good in that game against Montreal, and I was really impressed. And again, and kind of like how UC Soros this season, UC Soros would be a Vezina Trophy finalist. I don't believe he will be this year purely because of how the Predators have played around him and the awful situations that they put him in. I mean, there's just every single night lanes across the crease that leaving wide open shots on his blind side. Like, it's just, it's a bad situation right now. And if you move off Soros, you get as many assets as you can, and then you know you have Askarov coming in a few years, you use a guy like a Kevin Lankinen or someone else as a placeholder at the goaltender position. I feel like, you know, because UC Soros came up when he was about 20, 24, 25. You know, Askarov's like 21. In a couple of years, when you build a team and then you bring up a young stud like that into an already filled out roster, you're talking about putting yourself into another run like it was in 2017.
Well, okay, let me say something quickly, Junie. I will say though, April does have a point. I mean, when you look at the NHL rebuilding, like from top to bottom, if you want to go full rebuild and not retool in the NHL, is really, really hard. And it's not like the NFL or maybe the NBA where you can pretty much do it within, you know, whether it's a season or two. I mean, right, you can get a star quarterback and you can make it work, right? I kind of look at Jacksonville. I know they didn't do it in a season or two, but pretty much once they got, you know, Trevor Lawrence and they had those two seasons where, you know, they hadn't been good for a while, but I mean, it wasn't that long. You know, I look at the NHL. The NHL is very, very different. I mean, you look at teams like the Florida Panthers with the longest playoff series win drought in history at 24 seasons long. You look at the Buffalo Sabres, active drought for missing the playoffs, 11 consecutive seasons. I will say in the NHL, it is a lot harder to fully rebuild and then also, you know, make it work just because of, you know, all the factors, right? The hard cap, even just the way that the NHL is set up. I mean, you know, you don't see guys go play collegiate hockey and then they get right into the league. It's just so unique where I do kind of agree with April in the fact of, yeah, blowing it up and rebuilding is, you know, it's great. The idea of it is great. We're actually seeing Chicago doing it right now. They're really trying to tank to get that number one overall pick. So will it work for them? But it doesn't always work. I think that that is where they need to go right now, because I do think that, I wouldn't say a full rebuild, because I think they have some young guys who you're going to want to be a part of this team.
And that's the key, is they have young guys.
Well, they have young guys, but I mean, you know, we've seen what, yeah, Cody Glass has been able to do, but also with Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson and other guys out there, or they haven't had to, you know, carry the load of truly being, you know, the young core. But Junie, quickly, we have a call. We got two calls on the phone line. So first call, we've got Joe in Spring Hill wants to weigh in on the Preds. Hey, Joe, how are we doing this morning?
I'm doing great. Thanks so much for taking my call. I agree with the young lady as well. When it comes to the NHL, let's break it down. More so than any other sport, you can make a run by just getting into the playoffs. We know that in NBA, history dictates to us the cream always rises to the top. If you look at the it's mostly always chalk through the playoffs. When it comes to the NFL, we know any given Sunday, anything can happen. With Major League Baseball, you need the right pitching rotation, the guys on the right day's rest. Things have to fall into order. But in the NHL, if you think about it, the President's Trophy awarded to the team with the most points, they mostly never win the Stanley Cup or even get to the Stanley Cup because there's always someone lurking, that one goaltender that can make a run. We saw that with the Kings, with Quick. Going back to my childhood, whether it was Ken Dryden, I mean, it doesn't even matter over the years. So I would rather see the Predators just get in. The other thing, I think people will support the Predators no matter what, even if there's a rebuild or a downturn. It'll never be that long. And let's face it, when it comes to the product itself, the NHL is the best sport to see live. So no matter what, people always want to take in a hockey game. I mean, I went to the Ottawa Senators game. It was a Saturday in December. 12:30 puck drop. We're out of there by 3 o'clock, emptying out into Broadway. It's Christmas time. It's beautiful. You know, it's just a wonderful thing. So we won't have any problem with season tickets, or not so much season, but those ticket packages. People like those, you know, give me 8, 10, 12 games. So I think we'll be fine as far as that's concerned. So, you know, I just like to keep Saros. Don't make any crazy deals. You got a decent goaltender in place. You know what needs to be done. I mean, we've seen teams win the cup with the crazy neutral zone traps or even a little dump and chase. We can put some pieces around this guy. But as long as you got a solid goaltender, like I said, NHL more than any other sport, you can make that run. So let's just get in the playoffs and, you know, let the puck fall where it may. Guys, love the show. Appreciate you taking my call. And enjoy the weekend. Take care.
Of course, Joe. Have a great weekend. What a great caller.
Excellent call from Joe.
That just like made me happy to hear a fan, like to hear, you know, a positive towards the Nashville Predators, because I do feel like after the game against the Bruins, there has been a dark cloud kind of hanging over this team and just the state of union, you know?
Well, and to your point, listen, I don't think it's going to be like a full uphaul of this whole team. I mean, you're not getting rid of Roman Josi. You're not getting rid of Philip Forsberg. And when you look at the young guys that you have, the Tanner Janos, the Tommy Novaks, the Yuso Parsons, like there's young guys on this team. Now, to his point about the goaltender, it's like at some point, whether it's this offseason, next offseason, you know, with the talent level and the hype around Askarov, there's going to have to come a time to where this organization is going to have to choose. And to my only point, I'm not saying that they should move off UC Saros. I think it could potentially bring in a lot of positives. My thing is when this team needs a lot of assets, and the worst part about the Predators organization historically is finding and developing forwards. If you trade UC Saros, then that's going to give you the opportunity to go out and find one of these high-level forwards in the draft that you can develop and bring along with the young talent, with the veteran Philip Forsberg and Roman Josi. And I think that Askarov coming in, once the roster's filled out, will give you a better chance in order to go out and compete and still give you high-level goaltender play. It's just that's the one thing about the Predators that's different than every other team in the NHL, is that they have consistently found excellent goaltending play, which is really good for this organization. But at the other end of the spectrum, they have been awful at finding good forward offensive production out of the players that they look and try to develop. So I love the caller's response to that. I just think it's just going to come down to a decision of what do we want to do, what's best for the organization, and which goaltender do we want to go with for the future? Because I think eventually they're going to have to move off one of them.
You look at the Nashville Predators, Pekka-Rinne, UC Saros, and you've got Askarovs, you know, in the wings waiting. It makes me think of, you know, the Packers. They've been graced with, you know, Brett Favre and then an Aaron Rodgers. You look at the Colts. They had a Manning, a Luck. Just those organizations who consistently are lucky at finding one of the most important players on their roster. Adam in Portland, I know you're on the phone line. Hang with us. We're going to go to a quick break. discuss the Predators a little bit more, and then take a look around the NFL as a whole. And then we're going to talk a little UT basketball coming up today. Here, listen to the Michelle and Juni Show, 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Michelle and Juni, 102.5, 106.3, the Game. Welcome back in. We are live today from the Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios. We got Jared Cassidy, Juni Riddle. I'm Michelle Knezovic, discussing the Nashville Predators. And right now we're going to head to our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Adam in Portland, you want to weigh in on the Preds? Hey, Adam, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, Miss Michelle. Hey, if you guys loved that last guy, you're really going to hate me. So,
Here we go.
I don't have the same spin that he does. I love his enthusiasm, but it's all nonsense. Like, this is a team that's really regressed since they hit the peak. They hang on the players way too long. I will say the positive for David Poile, which I've never been more of a fire David Poile guy than I am right now. The positive is that he was able to move PK Subban, Kyle Turris and Ryan Ellis. Those are three contracts I thought we were stuck with forever, and he was able to get rid of them. So that's impressive. But overall, man, like, we built our team around a short goalie. Everybody acts like, I mean, he's good. If people think, like, if they can look at the stats and go, hey, he's awesome, then cool. But I see a short goalie who gets beat up high a lot. I know you guys aren't going to like that. Anytime, it's like sacrilege when you start talking about UC Saros negatively. Because it's like, oh, God, this team in front of them is not very good. Well, I agree with that. Also, Roman Josi, like, nobody can criticize him in this town because he's so awesome and he looks like Superman. Dude's playing like crap here lately. I think Ekholm's played better than him, and Ekholm hasn't been playing well. So all of our defensemen that we built our team around, the Barry Trotz spreads, we built our team around strong defense and, you know, opportunistic offense. They're trash now. They're not good anymore. We now have a bad defense.
Sorry, Adam, not to cut you off. Quick question. What – put your GM hat on right now. So the only thing that's off the table, because the ownership has made it very clear that they want to keep David Poile, what would you like to see from this organization?
I'd definitely not keep David Poile. I mean, it's just you got to have a different personnel in there. Fire him and let Barry Trotz. I mean, it's a pipe dream. Let Barry Trotz play some type of an executive role. I don't think he wants to coach a rebuild, but maybe he wants to be an executive, because he already has a home in Middle Tennessee, like a nice home. So why not let him come back in some type of executive role and help rebuild the roster the right way? Because we used to have good defense. Like, that was a thing. You know, if you're going to beat us, it's going to be 2-1. Now it's like, man, we're going to give up 5 goals in a period, or we're going to get – you know, you just can't trust this team anymore. So I'm less optimistic as the last guy.
Well, Adam, thank you so much for calling in. So, Adam, a different approach, Juni. You know, he's on the front of – he's very vocal about, you know, wanting to fire David Poile. I think part of the reason, you know – I don't really bring that up or really give that much, you know, thought, is because the ownership has very clearly said that they're not going to do that. And I know that it's very easy for somebody just to say that. And we saw what just happened with the Tennessee Titans, right? I mean, maybe Adam Strunk gave John Robinson a contract extension and then he gets fired. I just really don't see David Poile getting fired.
I don't either. I don't think he will till Haslam takes over as the ownership. But, you know, for right now, and I might get criticized for this, I don't think right now is the time for David Poile to get fired. Listen, I mean, I get it. He makes the moves. He makes the decisions. Mm-hmm. He saw the production of last year. And I think that, I mean, I can see where he's coming from into thinking that, okay, you know, if we get 80% of this production back, I get everybody had a career year, but if all of our stats go back to normal, we get a few more pieces, we can be competitive. This year has been a huge just drop off. And I think it's been eye-opening to him. And I think that David should, you know, with his resume, should have the opportunity to at least try to right his wrongs. If he can't, then yes, I believe he should get fired. But, you know, with what happened last year and all the production from the big players, Adam's right. I mean, it's disappointing. Roman Josi hasn't been nowhere near as good this season. Philip Forsberg, you know, he's been dealing with some injuries as well, has not been as good. Matt Duchene, you know, he was super disappointing his first couple years in Nashville and then started to pick it up the past two seasons, but now he's back to that disappointing Matt Duchene. So I would say we're at a crossroads right now to where David Poile has the opportunity to really right his wrongs. And I feel like if he doesn't, then that warrants him. It's his time to go. But I would say as of right now, you know, David Poile is the reason the Nashville Predators are still here. David Poile built the team that took this organization to its first Stanley Cup and nearly won it. So I just feel like although he's been here a long time and the last couple of years have been rough, I feel like he should get this one last opportunity to be able to right the ship because – in hindsight, I get we can look at recency bias. He has been a huge part of the success of this organization. And I feel like he should be granted one last opportunity to try and move off some of these contracts that that have not been suitable for this team.
And, Junie, I think a couple other factors, too, you know, that probably play into the frustration is Philip Tomasino being in Milwaukee for such a long time. And then also Ellie Tolvanen producing for the Seattle Kraken and kind of breaking out there. I think those two things, you know, to the Predators fan base had probably been a little bit frustrating because we talk about that young forward development and how important it is, not only in the NHL as a whole, but for this Predators team, because they have had a hard time doing that. So I think, you know, when you talk about drafting these guys and then also developing them in Milwaukee, continuing that development down to the Nashville or up, but geography down to the Nashville Predators is so, so important. They've had the luxury of having phenomenal goaltenders, Pekka-Rinne, Juuse Saros, Askarov, but you know, some of the other pieces just haven't been able to keep up with that. Junie, quick point.
Yeah. Quick point. I think, You did touch on it, but I'd say the one flaw that has really been dragging David Poile down has been his commitment to head coach John Hines. And I think at some point you need to look at the resume of John Hines. He wasn't successful in New Jersey. He hasn't been successful here. He hasn't done what he's done.
Has he not been successful here?
I would say not. I mean, he hasn't won a playoff series. This team under Peter Laviolette won multiple playoff series, went to the cup final and set a standard. And he has not lived up to that standard. And I think when you look at the development of the players, I don't feel as if he has put them in the right position. It's not David Poile's job to develop Ellie Tolvanen and put him in the right position. That's John Hines. And when you're not getting that production and you're seeing these players leave and go get that production elsewhere, and he's still committing to this guy, I think that's also dragging David Poile's reputation down, you know, according to the fans. I truly believe that.
I will say, you know, John Hines did get here in COVID, but I also do believe David Poile hasn't given John Hines the best tools, the best players to succeed, combination with, you know, development and production. I think it really does come down to all of those factors playing into it. So when we try to pinpoint one different or one specific thing, you can't, because I feel like, you know, you combine the drafting, you combine the development, you combine, you know, right, all of these factors, and we get what we have right now. We promise we will get to some NFL talk. We've been teasing it all show long, but Nashville Predators fans, you want to talk and you want your voice to be heard, and we want your voice to be heard too. So we will still be taking calls and texts, 615-737-1025. But on the other side, Junie and I are going to talk about some off-season NFL moves. What could the Tennessee Titans be thinking, and where will Aaron Rodgers land? Coming up next on Michelle and Junie, 1025, 1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. Welcome back into Michelle and Junie. I am Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle, Jared Cassidy. We are both live today. We are virtual, but you can watch us streaming on Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, presented by Superbook Sports. Also, coming up at 10:45, Junie and I are going to take a look at some of the college basketball lines today on Superbook Sports. We're going to give you some of our picks. I know that Dan from Clifton Park, my stepdad, shout out. That's his favorite segment of the day. He loves the gambling segments. Who doesn't want to make money? I know Junie made quite a wad of cash on the Super Bowl. I know Junie's riding high on that. Who doesn't love a little nice deposit to the bank account, Junie? You haven't even had to gloat. I was watching the game with Junie, and we won't say the dollar amount, but this guy is like, yeah, you know, I put a couple parlays out there. I probably should check on those. And what do you know, in the first half of the game, Junie's like, my parlay hit. And then in the second half, and I was like, wow, that must be nice.
two different parlays hitting in one game. Making a significant amount of money. Listen, you know, me and my wife, we just bought a house. We're closing on it this upcoming week. And I just looked over and I said, baby, what color countertops are you wanting? Because, you know, Papa's got it now. So.
No, but I do think that, and I wish we got this on tape or on video. One of the best moments was, and if everybody remembers, Jalen Hurts had a deep throw to Devontae Smith down the field. Junie needed Jalen Hurts to have under 1.5 passing touchdowns. And if Devontae Smith dove into that end zone, Junie's parlay would not have hit. And if you guys remember, he veers out of bounds right before the touchdown. And I think your soul left your body on that play, Junie.
Well, it did. But I mean, as you had mentioned, my first parlay hit in the first half. So it wasn't like I was going out empty handed. But, you know, the second parlay, which was, you know, significantly a little bit more money than the first one, when that one hit, it was just the cherry on top. So, you know, good stuff. Good stuff with the Super Bowl. You know, I've never really been a player prop bet kind of person, but I think now I am. So,
well, you were like, I just kind of did this random parlay. Let me check it. And you're like, oh. I'm looking good on this.
Yeah. But
unfortunately, we will have to wait 7 months for some real football, which is quite depressing. But, you know, the NFL offseason always keeps us really busy. We actually had a pretty busy Friday. The Commanders officially announced they are hiring Eric Bieniemy as their assistant head coach and offensive coordinator. Junie, so the Commanders actually made it official 30 minutes ago. They posted on their official Twitter account saying, welcome Eric, two-time Super Bowl winning coordinator Eric Bieniemy is now our new assistant head coach and offensive coordinator. Eric Bieniemy's been a guy who's been highly regarded throughout the entire NFL, has had numerous head coaching interviews, numerous offensive coordinator interviews. And as soon as I saw the title come out with the Commanders, where it said assistant head coach and offensive coordinator, in my head, I thought that is probably a big reason as to why there wasn't maybe more chatter about him coming here, because Mike Vrabel is very much the head coach here. And with Mike Vrabel having more say with Rand Carthon coming in, and then seeing that Eric Bieniemy got that title with the Commanders, it made a little bit more sense in my head, because I could not see him coming here and, you know, getting an assistant head coach / offensive coordinator position. But it looks like that's what he will be with Ron Rivera in Washington. He said he wanted to go with a defensive minded head coach. So you look here, you look to the Ravens, you look at Tennessee, but now it kind of makes some sense to me as to why maybe we didn't hear more about an interview process here, Junie.
He's also going to get some control too. He's going to get to be able to pick out his offensive staff, which is really important. And, you know, playing under Andy Reid coaching under Andy Reid is always tough, because he's going to take a lot of the credit. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people have kind of, you know, spewed out the narrative that why have other Andy Reid assistants, you know, gotten jobs mm-hmm. and this guy hasn't. Well, you know, Eric Bieniemy has been arrested, I believe, 3 or 4 times in his past, domestic violence, DUI, bar fights. He's had a rough past, and I think he's really kind of gotten it together, but that's really kind of held him back a bit. I feel as if this is a really, really good opportunity for him, because the Washington Commanders are a team right now that, when their defense is healthy, which they weren't last year, they didn't have Chase Young. When they're healthy, they're a really good unit. And then you look offensively, they have a great run game. They got Robinson in the backfield. He was a really good rookie running back this year. You have, you know, Curtis Samuel, Jahan Dotson, who was a rookie last year, who had a really good showing. And I think one of the best young, talented receivers out there in Terry McLaurin. So they got a good run game. They got some good receivers. Their offensive line is, like, young and up and coming. And then you got a guy like Sam Howell, who they are trying to kind of push as the starter to see what they have in him. And a lot of people don't remember, Sam Howell was projected to be, you know, a top 10 pick going into last college football season before he was drafted. So, you know, he didn't have that great of a last year there at North Carolina, because a lot of his core players had went off to the NFL prior to that. So Sam Howell, a young, talented QB looking to get his opportunity. So it's going to be really, really good for Eric Bieniemy to, like, put his thumbprint on this opportunity and show other teams that he can really, you know, take the bull by the horns and really command an NFL franchise by taking this opportunity and trying to turn a Washington Commanders offense that hasn't been productive in years into a really good unit. So I'm going to be interested to see that going into 2023.
A couple other moves in the NFL to round out the week. So Super Bowl winning assistant Thomas Brown, he was the assistant head coach with the Rams under McVay, is now joining Frank Reich in Charlotte as their offensive coordinator. So we're kind of starting to see, you know, all of these offensive coordinator positions being filled, especially as the combine is just a couple of weeks away. I think it's at the end of February.
Love that hire.
You love that hire.
I believe it's March 5th.
March 5th. Okay. So,
but I do love this hire. I've heard a lot of good things about this guy. He was on a lot of offensive coordinator prospects. He seems to be one of those younger offensive minds, learned under McVay. He was also, I believe he was the assistant head coach there. I might be wrong about that.
Assistant head coach with McVay.
But he got some good experience with McVay. I think he's one of those young offensive minds in that system that can really flourish. So Carolina, they got a good one in him.
And Carolina's going to be a team, too, who potentially could be looking for a quarterback this offseason. They tried the Baker Mayfield / Sam Darnold. We all know that Baker now is with the Rams. Will Sam Darnold play? Will Matt Corral get an opportunity with the Panthers after being hurt all year? The young guy from Ole Miss. But with a new head coach, with a new offensive coordinator, could they be a team maybe looking for a guy in the draft, looking for a guy in free agency? Derek Carr, who's going to be one of the main quarterbacks, trying to find a landing spot this offseason, looks like he visited or is visiting. Derek Carr is on a visit to the Jets. Ian Rappaport tweeted 3 hours ago, so that was from Friday. So Derek Carr is going to be one of the veteran guys who he has already gone on a visit to New Orleans. Now visiting the Jets. Of course, we have Aaron Rodgers, who knows if he entered his darkness retreat. I don't really know. He went on a rant last week that he didn't. I don't know if he's in there now, but he, I would assume, will have to find a landing spot, and then we'll probably find out about Derek Carr and then Jimmy Garoppolo, and it'll be like a domino effect. But Derek Carr is going to be a guy looking for a landing spot. I know some people have linked him possibly to here. No official news if he's visited or anything like that, but if he is planning on that or Tennessee is interested, I'm sure that'll probably come in the next couple of weeks. But the luxury of Derek Carr is you could sign him and have him now, because he didn't allow, he gave the double birds to the Raiders saying, yeah, no, I'm not going to take a trade. Good for him. So he is a free agent already. If you were wanting to sign him, you wouldn't have to do a trade or anything like that. You would just have to pick up his contract. Junie, the way I look at it is it wouldn't be an upgrade if you got a Derek Carr here. Yeah, he's a little bit younger. The guy hasn't had a playoff wins, made the playoffs once. They lost to the Bengals last year. I just think he's pretty much the same level as a Ryan Tannehill, and Tannehill's already been in your system. But I know some fans have said, well, let's just try something new. But new doesn't always mean better. It's just different.
My one thing with Derek Carr, which is, you know, he's kind of an up and down kind of quarterback. You know, some years he looks really good. I know last season in 2021, you know, he had a really, really good year and they made the playoffs. And they ended up playing the eventual AFC champions Bengals in the first game, and they were right there in that game. So, you know, the expectations this year for the Raiders were high. Their defense was kind of their fault. They were still a top 10 offense this year. I think they kind of faltered towards the end of the season. But I would say the one thing about Derek Carr compared to Ryan Tannehill is I think Tannehill's not going to make as many mistakes, but Derek Carr is also going to make a lot more big plays than Ryan Tannehill. And also, I think there was a caller, I don't remember what show they called into this week with us, but somebody had called into our station and had said, made a really good point and said, you know, a lot of people thought the same thing about Ryan Tannehill when he got traded.
Oh, he called into our show.
So he called into your show and then he said, what if Derek Carr goes somewhere else and with a fresh start, knowing that, you know, the team that drafted him and that he loved gave up on him, his motivation for him to make that next step. I could see that happening. But like you said, I necessarily, with the amount of money that they're paying Ryan Tannehill, I would not make the transition to Derek Carr, because regardless if he takes another step up, I still just don't think it's that big of a difference to where it's really going to turn the tide of your franchise.
Junie, I agree too. It'll be interesting to see if he visits another team this weekend or if we get more information on that. But it's our favorite time of the show. Coming up next, we're going to take a look at some of the SEC college basketball games around the country today. I've got a couple takes, a couple games that I am looking at closely. We got the Vols heading to Lexington. Auburn is also heading into Memorial tonight to face Vanderbilt. Coming up on the other side, we will take a look at Superbook and we'll give you some picks of the day, some locks of the day on Michelle and Junie on 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Welcome back into the Michelle and Junie Show. I'm Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle, Jared Cassidy, live from our Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical Studios this morning. Final segment of the day. Taking a look at Superbook Sports right now. They've got a bunch of lines. We're going to take a look at, listen, the SEC tournament is less than a month away. It will begin on March 8th in Bridgestone Arena. We're going to have full coverage. Junie and I will be covering the tournament all week long, well, half a week into the weekend. So excited that it's back in Nashville this year, Junie. I went as a fan last year, but really, really excited as, you know, football season comes to an end. We really start to gear up with college basketball, about five or so regular season games left, then the tournament, and then we're right into March, and it is a special time of year.
No, definitely. And for me, as just a sports fan in general, I mean, it's the Super Bowl. And then it's March Madness. I think it's at least the second biggest sporting event in this country. I love it. I grew up in Kentucky where college basketball is king. So we're just getting down to that wire, you know, the final stretch of February, getting into conference championships and then Selection Sunday for the best tournament in the world, Michelle. So I cannot wait to start diving into some college basketball.
Junie, you and I both, we're going to take a look at a couple of the games around the state, and then we'll also pick the Florida Panthers and the Nashville Predators coming up today at 1, a little matinee hockey this afternoon. Okay, so first, the highly anticipated Tennessee coming off one of their biggest wins of the year against Alabama, number one team in the country. There has been 8 different number one teams in the country to lose this year, which just makes me even more excited for March because the competition is fierce. So Tennessee is already in Lexington this afternoon for the game. Tennessee is a 2-point favorite. They're minus 135 on the money line. Kentucky's plus 115 on the money line. Some things to note quickly before we pick this game. Tennessee, it's unlikely that Josiah James Jr. does not play, and also Julian Phillips. For Kentucky, CJ Fredericks has already been ruled out. He has a cracked rib that happened a couple weeks ago, so he'll probably be out for the next couple of weeks. And then Sevier Wheeler has a question mark under his name, so not sure if he's going to play. So both Tennessee and Kentucky down some important players. Tennessee still favored. This team is, or this game is pretty different for both teams right now. Tennessee is trying to rack up the wins that'll help build their resume to earn the one seed for the NCAA tournament, whereas Kentucky is sitting outside of the bubble right now, trying to rack up some wins just to secure a spot in the tournament. The game is in Lexington. And we will begin to pick this game as I am procrastinating. Very nervous for this game today. Kentucky won the first matchup in Thompson Bowling Arena. I'm going to give Kentucky the slight edge today. I think it's going to be, it's always a tough matchup, but Tennessee coming off that huge win against Alabama, I think that they dropped this one in Lexington today. I think Kentucky just needs it more as far as, you know, needing to get in the tournament and really build those wins. So give me Kentucky plus the two today and also on the money line plus 115. Junie?
I'm going to go the same route. I'm going to take the Cats. Rupp Arena is the hardest place to play in probably, you know, all of college basketball, really.
Them and
especially
Cameron.
When you bring, especially when you bring in their arch rival, the Tennessee Volunteers. I just look at their matchup last time, the way that, you know, Kentucky won the physical battle, got a lot of offensive rebounds, second opportunities. I think that will continue because they're one of those teams in the SEC that can compete with Tennessee physically. So Kentucky wants it more. They're at home. They got the home court advantage. And like I said, just based off the last time these two teams squared away, I think the Cats want it more, and I think they get it done. Give me them plus two.
Jared?
Completely depends on if the defense shows up for the balls, because their defense has been pretty bad for this last couple of games. I would say the last three games or so. But I will take the 1-1 home and at home wins. Okay. So I will take the Vols today.
Pretty much a pick'em on that one. Jared, I'll also add to you on the Tennessee front. I think it's really important, too, that Sakai Ziegler and Santiago Vescovi have a good offensive game. They're their shooters, especially with James out. They're going to need to offensively produce for this. And I also think Plavsic in the paint is going to be really important as well. He's got the size on Oscar Tshiebwe. So I think he's also going to be a factor into this game.
I will say this. Vescovi has been pretty impressive the last couple games in shooting the perimeter three-point shot.
He's a good shooter.
He's looked
don't,
pretty
don't
good.
Don't mention foul shots to Vols fans.
I won't because the
only thing that needs to stop is these like crazy alley-oop attempts that we keep trying to throw to everybody like that. And then just the non on ball defense has just been terrible.
I think that probably is, if you are any college basketball fan and you have a specific team, there's nothing more frustrating than seeing them attempt to do something like that. And it just fail miserably.
Because you're just giving away the ball.
Just set up something or just take the layup.
Yeah, I'd rather have a failed shot than anything else.
I completely agree with you on that front, Jared. Okay, switching over, heading to the West End. We mentioned this game earlier. We got Vanderbilt plus three today and also plus 130 on the money line on Superbook Sports. Auburn is coming into town. Bruce Pearl, this Auburn team, huge game last weekend. They had Alabama come into Auburn. Alabama handled them, won by at least 10 points. But listen, Vanderbilt has been on a tear. I think the size with Liam Robbins in the paint and also their point guard in Ezra and some of the outside shooting that they've been able to have from Studi and Tyron Matthews. I'm taking Vanderbilt in this one. I think they're on a roll right now. I think that Auburn could look over this team. Just traditionally, you know, looking at Vanderbilt and how they haven't been much of a factor, even earlier this season. So I'm going to take Vanderbilt today plus the three. That's going to be a night game in Memorial. Junie?
Michelle, I hate it when we agree so much, but I look at these two teams' trajectory, and Vanderbilt's going this way, and Auburn is 2-5 out of their last seven. So
yep.
I think the doors are going to keep rolling. They know if they win this one that they have a really good chance of making the NCAA tournament, like we had mentioned in our morning brew to open up the show. So give me the doors. Anchor down. Let's celebrate on the West Side.
Anchor down, and Liam Robbins is going to be a huge part of being their anchor in today's game. That is all Junie and I have for you today. Enjoy a day of college basketball. I also have to give a shout out going to see my brother today. He is coaching for Oberlin up here in Ohio. So excited to see him. We watched in his game today. Enjoy some college basketball today, everybody. Judy and I will be back in action same time, same place next Saturday. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app.